Srila Gurudev Ki Jai, Srimad Mahaprabhu Ki Jai, Sri Harinam Sankirtan Ki Jai, Sri Tri Gauranditai Ki Jai, Sri Brajanath Haladar Ki Jai, Sri Nishimha Bhagavan Ki Jai, Virantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Sri Brahma Stuti Ki Jai, Gaur Bhaktavrinda Ki Jai, Gaur Premanand
Hari
So, pranam to all of you connected online, present here. So we are continuing with our series of lectures about Sri Brahma Stuti, or the prayers of Sri Brahma. And today is the second class where we will make a second part of the introduction. In the next meeting we will start officially with the first verse of Brahma Stuti. But today I want to share some further thoughts about the implications and the significance and the intricacies of Brahma Stuti and some of the background. But as I usually do, generally I do a brief recap of the previous lecture as an attempt to, sometimes it's not so brief, but I'll try my best. So in our first lecture we started with first introduction class, we tried to give some context to the Brahma Stuti, so we went through chapters 12 and 13 of the 10th canto, since Brahma Stuti is in chapter 14 of 10th canto. So we went to chapter 12, which is Agasura Lila, and chapter 13, which is Brahma Vimohan Lila. But even we went a little bit far beyond that, to the very beginning of creation, we spoke about also a little bit about Brahma, and some attributes of Brahma, his position basically. And how in the beginning of creation of one creative cycle, Brahma is born from the lotus coming from Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. Thank you. And he's inquiring for his source, eventually hearing this word tapa, engaging in meditation, and eventually having the darshan of Krishna, who gives him Chaturshloki, who appears and like his guru, instructs him. And Brahma expresses there at the beginning of creation a desire for Sakya with Krishna, on some level at least. So after that, Brahma keeps intensifying his desire while engaging in his duties as an architect of the multiverse. And eventually Krishna manifests his Nara Lila on earth in Dwapara Yuga. And we reach the point when Krishna is in his Kshesh Kumar, or the end of his Kumar age, the first of three ages. We spoke about these three ages of Krishna, Kumar, Pauganda, and Kishore, which also revolve around three types of relationships, Vatsalya, Sakya, and Madhurya, respectively, and which are also addressed in different sections of the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, primarily Vatsalya and Kumar connect to Damodar Lila, Pauganda and Sakya connected to Brahma Vimohan Lila and Agasura Lila, as we will see, and eventually Kishore and his Madhurya sensibilities in connection to the Rasa Panchadhyaya. Let's see five chapters about the Rasa Lila. So we explain something about the 12th chapter, which is the killing of Agasur, basically. Krishna and his friends are having their first picnic in the forest with all that it entails, all the excitement and emotion. So they are organizing and going there. And eventually, well, as we know, Agasur is going there trying to kill Krishna. In this case, passively, open his mouth, transforming into a python, open his mouth, and waiting for the kids to get excited into it, if you will. And as we know, the boys looked at the beginning, think this is a new cave. Eventually, they realize it's a snake. They want to he wants to eat us, but nonetheless, Krishna is Krishna. We fully trust his protection. So in the spirit of abhaya, fearlessness, abhayatva, they enter there, and as we know, Krishna has to enter, even although it was not his desire that they entered there, but Lila Shaktimai had another desire in mind, orchestrating the Lila. So Krishna enters there and eventually starts to expand and suffocates, they say, the Agasur, and eventually revives the boys and who are there, who are dying in separation of Krishna, basically. So eventually, as we know, a light comes from the body of Agasura, which is the Atma of Agasura, waiting outside till Krishna and his friends go out of Agasura. And the calves were also inside, because when the boys enter, the calves follow them At this point, they are not yet cow herding, but calf herding. So the boys came out, the calves and Krishna, and this light that was waiting outside when Krishna comes, the Agasura's Atma enters Krishna. Some acharyas will say it's Sayuja, some others will say Sarupya. But the point is, it was a big event, and all the devas came on earth and threw flowers and celebrated. So this reached the ears of Brahma, who was curious about what's going on earth, so he decided to hit to see and went to with his swan, and the Vimohan starts there. No, what's going on here? This great event, this great demon obtaining such a liberation, and who gave that? This little boy, which seems like my guru, but it doesn't seem at the same time. So well, the point is that Sukadev Goswami was narrating this super exercise. 1 year after, the whole thing was disclosed to the rest of Vrindavan. Super Ekshi Maharaj said, stop there. Why 1 year after? And please tell me the reason for that. So then we go to chapter 13, which is the Brahma Vimohan Lila. So then, as we know, the picnic was waiting for them. No? They have this break brackets with Agasura, bracket Lila in between, one waiting, and then parentheses, and they continued. No? So they went to the picnic, and we described how informal the picnic was, and the boys tasting something and giving the sweetest, the most tasty thing to Krishna, putting in his own mouth, maybe with the left hand, and nothing following Vaishnava etiquette, if you will. And Brahma is biddy, you know, for being very paka in following all the rules. So at this point, one of the four heads of Brahma started to spin. No? The Vimohan starts to Mohan at this time. And Krishna started to give Brahma a trailer of Sakya Rasa. He wanted Sakya Rasa, so Krishna is Brahma's bhajan, and desire starts to blossom to the point that the object of his Sakya is appearing in front of them with his associate, with the perfect stage for Sakya. So eventually, Brahma starts to get bewildered by this, and the calves start to get lost by drinking water in some near, far away distance. So Krishna tells to his friends, do not discourage, do not suffer, I will go and bring them back. You continue with your picnic. So now it's that when Brahma thinks, okay, I will put to test this. This is not my guru. It seems this is an imposter, so I will put him to test. So he kidnaps, or thinks he kidnaps the boys, taking them to a cave, but actually he's taking some illusory expansions of them, as we spoke, and the real boys, and as we see, the real calves remain in another prakash or window in Vrindavan without being touched by Brahma, Yogamaya arranging all this. So he then he thinks he's taking the calves and the boys to that cave, while actually the calves and the boys remain somewhere else. So Krishna at one point seems like, what's going on here? The calves are not here. He goes back to the boys are not here, but eventually realizes that this is Brahma. So he thinks, okay, let's do something about it, and he expands in replica form of each one of his friends, each one of his calves, externally identical, internally identical, with this showing how much he knew their hearts, which is a very important point here. So for a whole year, Krishna remained in that particular situation, and nobody noticed. Only Krishna knew what was going on, actually. And something interesting, even not Balaram realized that, who, as we remember, he was not there on that day because he was being on his monthly birthdays and stuck by the affection of Vatsali at home. But after almost 1 year, Balaram starts to notice the increased affection that the parents had for the kids and the cows had for the calves, which actually were expansions of Krishna. Because ideally everyone in Vrindavan loves Krishna the most and loves everyone else a lot, but first Krishna. But Baladev noticed they are loving their trials and their calves like Krishna. So there's something strange here. And as we know, every cow had the desire to have Krishna as their child. And now Krishna was fulfilling that. Every mother, father want to have Krishna as their son. And now Krishna was fulfilling that. So everyone was experiencing this extreme increased affection. So all of them were in a kind of vimohan as well, some time of bewilderment. And again, Balaram asks Krishna about this, and eventually Yogamaya retires, and Krishna tells Balaram what's going on actually at that point. So basically the idea then, Brahma had left at that point for a moment, one of his moments, which was 1 year on earth, and then he returns to see what's going on, and he realizes everything continues as normal. So he goes to say, what's going on? I put all of them in the cave. So he goes to the cave and finds the illusory replicas of the boys and calves. He returns to Vrindavan. Boys and calves are there. He goes back and forth. He thinks maybe Krishna is taking them when I'm not in the other place, but it's not what's going on. And he's, at this point, he's two of his four heads are spinning. And eventually, as we know what happened, all these replica forms start to show full Aishwarya, and from each calf and each boy that actually was Krishna, a form of Narayan appears. And different personalities worshipping each of the forms, even different Brahmas worshipping each of the forms, and Brahma witnessing all that. Three heads spinning, Vimohan. And here, at the very important point that today we will unfold is Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna is the source of all other forms of the Absolute. This moment, crucial moment, is showing that unlimited Narayans coming from Krishna and not vice versa. So Brahma is totally bewildered at this point, not knowing what to say, what to do. And suddenly all this Aishwarya, all these multiple forms collapse, disappear, and only Krishna remains as a child with the morsel of food in his hand and looking for his friends at calves, as it happened before Brahma left. So this for Brahma is too much. And at this point, his four heads are full spinning, Vimohan in every sense of the term. So at this point, they say that Brahma Chaturmukha, with his four heads, falls at the feet, falls from his swan and touches the ground of Braj, like the devas are not accustomed to do. And with taking turns with each of his four heads, offer pranams and bathes Krishna's feet with tears of love, and start to offer prayers. So at that point, we are just to begin the Brahma Stuti. But again, today we won't begin Brahma Stuti officially. I would like to a little bit elaborate on what we saw last class, especially in connection to this idea of Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam, that again will be manifest in some of the prayers of Brahma when he will explain Narayan Anga. Narayan is an Anga of Krishna, not vice versa. But yeah, today I would like to explore a little bit the further significance of this section of the Bhagavatam, which in one sense is arguably the most presents the most important conclusion of the Bhagavatam again, because the most important conclusion of the Bhagavatam, which somehow gives shape to our Sampradaya, is again Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. It's a very unique statement. No? Krishna is Bhagavan when, as Guru Maharaj will say, when he wants to be himself. No? In other words, God is one thing. When God wants to be himself, that's Krishna. And he's the source, the fountainhead of all forms of divinity. That's basically the stance in our particular Sampradaya. Aradyo Bhagavan Brajesatanayas Taddama Vrindavan. Our worshipable deity is Krishna, who is the son of Nanda Maharaj, like establishing he is the supreme form. What the Bhagavatam is saying, Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam, actually saying Braja Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam, no? Because we have Mathura Krishna, Dwarka Krishna, but the Goswamis and the Bhagavatam itself would make this point at Brahma Stuti here. This is the Krishna who is the fountainhead of even Narayan, which is again a very revolutionary statement for the times in which the Gaudiya Sampradaya was established. Chaitanya Charitamrita, see, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami will lots of detail try to make this point in the fourth chapter of Adi Lila, how Krishna is the source of Narayan and not vice versa. Because again, you have to travel in time and try to perceive the climate of the times and how that was not the case. But generally the standard was Krishna is an avatar of Vishnu, like many other avatars, and so on. So again, if there is something that defines our branch of Vaishnavism, Gaudiya Vaishnavism, is this, again, notion that unlike other Vaishnav Sampradayas, that Krishna is the original source of all forms of divinity, and not an avatar of Vishnu. Again, for us, we take that, if we will, for granted, because from day one is, oh yeah, Krishna is still one. But if one starts to appreciate the wider spectrum of beliefs and notions, that's not so common, if you will. No? So everyone else, almost except for the Gaudiyas, almost except for us, have this idea. No? Narayan is God, Krishna is an avatar of God. So Gaudiya Sampradaya is making a very bold statement. So again, this conclusion is not an invention of us. Again, it is there in the Bhagavatam, in the third canto of the Bhagavatam, where we find this line, Iti Chamsa Kalapumsam Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. So, Srila Jiva Goswami, he considers this line, again, it's a line, but it's a powerful line, which he calls the Paribhas Sutra. Paribhas Sutra of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So that's an important word. The Paribhas Sutra means, sutra is like a thread or like a very condensed aphorism, basically. And Paribhas means around which the rest of the text revolves. So it's like, it's only a line, but that line puts the whole text in context. So that Paribhas Sutra, that defining aphorism of the Bhagavatam is, again, Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. So the whole Srimad Bhagavatam is to be read according to this line. it may sound whimsical, like why only one line to put in context 18,000 verses? So our Goswami is explaining, they write more than 18,000 verses to explain why Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. Sometimes it is also called Paribhas Sutra, sometimes it's called Mahavakya. That's also a statement, like great statement. Like the followers of Shankaracharya will have their own Mahavakyas, like Soham or Aham Brahmasmi, things like this, no? We may consider our own Mahavakyas Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam, which in the words of Srila Prabhupada will be Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Actually, that's a way of saying Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. If you analyze the meaning of Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam and the implications of the Supreme Personality of God, that's a very interesting expression that we may repeat, but it's important to try to analyze. No, Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the Supreme has, to begin with the word Supreme, no? Interestingly, Supreme, you write Preme. Oh, yeah. So try to go to that. And su in Sanskrit means like a lot, like sudurlabha. You have durlabha, sudurlabha. You have prem, you have suprem. In Spanish it makes more sense because it's suprema or supremo. It's not supreme.
Exactly right.
So yeah. So supreme has to do with prem a lot, no? And the Supreme Personality, in other words, the Absolute has different faces, different, like a multifaceted jewel that you can approach from different places, different forms of personality, as we mentioned the other day. Like we may have, I don't know, when I am with my mother, I have one personality, if you will, one face of me. When I am with my guru, another face of me. When I am with my whatever, I mean, I don't have brother, sister, kids, no wife. I'm quite limited in my experience of rasa. But there are different faces to the same person. So if that happens to us, how much that applies to the Supreme. So from all the different personalities, if we will, of Bhagavan, this is the Supreme Personality. You know? When his personality is supreme, when his personality is contacted by the highest type of prem, that's Krishna, no? As we spoke, this is. If you change the type of prem, that's the Absolute is no longer Krishna. It's Narayan, Ramachandra, or Mathuresh Krishna, Dwarkadesh Krishna. But Braja Krishna corresponds with a type of prem, which is Su Prem, the highest type of prem, which make Krishna who he is. So Srila Prabhupada will connect very, very intelligently, very interestingly, this idea. Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam, Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's so supreme, so full of prem, that the idea of Godhead kind of disappears in the awareness of Krishna and in the awareness of the devotees in Vrindavan, as we know. In Vrindavan, God is Narayan. Krishna is not God in Vrindavan. Nobody worships Krishna. They worship Narayan, for the sake of Krishna. They love Krishna. They worship Narayan. But when they're worshiping Narayan, Nanda Maharaj has his Salagram Shila at home. He's worshiping Narayan. But his mind is somewhere else. Like sometimes we may be doing puja, as my Guru Maharaj says, and our mind may be somewhere else. Not with Krishna. But in Vrindavan, everyone is worshiping Narayan. but their mind is Krishna. What might Nanda Maharaj said, what might my Lal be doing now? Or Narayan, please protect my Krishna. Protect my Lal. So very interesting notion. So again, it's important that every time that we say Krishna is tu Bhagavan Swayam, or Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we attach in our minds to the word Krishna, the word Braja. Because there are other Krishnas, as we know. Krishna Mathura, Krishna Dwarka, but the Bhagavatam refers, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Swayam Bhagavan? Braja Krishna. Braja Krishna is tu Bhagavan Swayam. No, we add that, I mean, that's implication of the Bhagavatam. So again, our whole theology as Gaudiya Vaishnavas is revolving around these few lines, Krishna stu Bhagavan Swayam, these few words. But our Gaudiya Acharyas, the Goswamis to begin with, have extensively worked and developed this notion in his writing and shown us how much we can draw from these few words, how much content is that? Now, if we study all our Goswami Granta, all the books of the Goswami, we will find how all their books are revolving around the Bhagavatam and around this notion of Krishna's two Bhagavan. So, yeah. For example, in the words of Srila Rupa Goswami, his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he will speak in terms of Akila Rasamrita Murti, which is another way of saying Krishna's two Bhagavan. So, Krishna is the fullest personification of all the mellows, basically. Divine, sacred, static rapture, rasa, as my guru will put it. The thermometer is rasa, to measure which is the highest expression of the absolute. So Krishna is the king of rasa. He's rasaraj, rasik sekar, and so on. Interestingly, he develops his whole theory of rasa with Krishna in the center, based on the Bhagavatam as well. There's this famous verse in the Bhagavatam, Mala Nama Shanir Ninam Narabaram Smara Srinam Smaro Murti Mam, and so on. When Krishna is entering the arena to fight with Kamsa, and this verse points how there are different peoples in the audience, and each of them are seeing Krishna from different angles and experiencing different rasas, and there the five main rasas and the seven secondary rasas are included, showing Krishna is the perfect object of love, because all the different possible emotions find him as the perfect object simultaneously. In one single moment, 12 people were expressing different emotions, and so on. And there's another verse from Govardhan Lila, which is the opposite. When he's holding Giriraj, Krishna himself is experiencing simultaneously these five main rasas and the seven secondary rasas in relation to different situations. So from both sides of the equation, Krishna is, if you will, the king of rasa. So the Goswamis are trying to, again, to expand on this idea. What does it mean, Krishna is two Bhagavan? So yeah, as I told you the other day, Srila Jiva Goswami writes the Krishna Sandarbha, which is one of the six Sandarbhas or treatises. He writes the whole compound of six treatises called Bhagavat Sandarbha, which is a treatise on the Bhagavatam. So again, their books are revolving around the Bhagavatam. The first book is Tattva Sandarbha, showing how the Bhagavatam is the highest pramana or scriptural evidence. Then comes Bhagavat Sandarbha, showing the supremacy of Bhagavan above other forms of the absolute. Paramatma Sandarbha, explaining the tattva of the Jiva and Maya Shakti and Paramatma in connection to them. And then comes Krishna Sandarbha, which interestingly, they're Srila Jiva Goswami, after having established Bhagavan is supreme above Brahman and Paramatma, but among the faces of Bhagavan, Krishna is too Bhagavan. So yeah, Krishna is the supreme personality. He writes the whole Krishna Sandarbha, which establishes, I don't know, over 300 points drawing from the Bhagavatam to confirm this idea, how Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. But again, in a very unique form, as we will see, this line, Krishna is tu Bhagavan Swayam, Krishna is the source of all forms of the Godhead, even Narayan, this line plays out in this Brahma Vimohan Lila we have just seen the other day. And that will be expressed by Brahma in his praise. Because again, from Krishna, unlimited Narayans are appearing. So that's a very overt, clear idea that Krishna is tu Bhagavan Swayam in motion. basically. So the experience that Brahma has just had in connection to seeing, witnessing, oh my God, unlimited Narayans emanating from this one Krishna, little Krishna. The experience that Brahma had amounts to him witnessing this Paribas Sutra, Krishna's Tu Bhagavan Swayam, that we are discussing. No? Like he saw the practical expression of Krishna's Tu Bhagavan Swayam, unlimited Narayans coming from Krishna. So that's a very interesting idea. No? So, and of course, that's something that goes quite beyond the capacity of any other avatar. No? He's showing unlimited visions coming from him. So our conclusion in our Sampradaya is Krishna is the avatari. He's the source of all avatars. He's not an avatar of avatari Vishnu, but Vishnu is an avatar of Krishna. That's our theology, interestingly, no? Which of course differs from Sri Sampradaya, for example, respectfully, but Sri Sampradaya, for example, will say Krishna is an avatar of Vishnu. And Krishna is not God. I mean, he's God, but not the original God, that's Vishnu. We will say Krishna is the original God, not Vishnu. Of course, interestingly, when we will reach the Leela, the equation will turn up upwards again, because in the Leela, nobody will think Krishna is God. So now we have to properly learn Krishna is the Supreme Godhead. So someday we forget about that. And we start to see Krishna in terms of Madhurya Ras, Sakya Ras. And we will go again say, Vishnu is God. So at that point we will say, oh, the Sri Vaishnavas were right after all. So this is one of the main, again, I would say the main section, and my Guru Maharaj establishes this idea, the main section along the whole Bhagavatam, which establishes this point, Krishna's Tu Bhagavan Swayam, when Brahma is witnessing that. That's why it's so important, this section of Brahma Vimohan Lila, Brahma Stuti. There are other sections also in the Bhagavatam which prove this point, like when Vishnu kidnaps these dead sons of the Brahman, and Arjuna goes to rescue them and eventually goes with Krishna, and Vishnu says, I did all this because I want to have your darshan. So Vishnu is telling that to Krishna, like a way of saying, right. Even Vishnu wants to see Krishna. But I will argue that this Brahma Vimohan Lila makes the point even more straightforwardly, not like the unlimited Narayans coming from the form of Krishna. Also among different points, this Brahma Vimohan Lila, which is again like the preface to the Brahma Stuti, shows that, again, this is arguably the most Aishvaric section of the whole Srimad Bhagavatam, where the most Aishvari is their majesty, because unlimited Narayans. Narayan in itself is Vaikunthanath, Lakshmipati, the lord of all opulence. And here in this section, there are unlimited Narayans coming from one little Krishna. So there's lots of Aishvarya in the context of the Madhurya of Braj. So in other ways, this point is made in the Bhagavatam. The highest Aishvarya is actually Madhurya. And for Madhurya, I do not mean the romantic relationship, but the sweetness and the intimacy of Vrindavan. That's ultimately the highest Aishvarya. If you want to take Aishvarya as like Godhood, all that pertains to God, awareness of who is God, the greatest proof of divinity, sometimes called Bhagavatva, is the intimacy that we found in Braj. That's what the Brahma Vimohan Lila is showing. In this deep point of intimacy of Krishna, such a degree of Aishvarya is coming. Also showing like the Aishvarya is there in the background in Vrindavan. It's not playing out overtly, but it's there. It's there present. The Madhurya or the intimacy of Vrindavan has Aishvarya as its backdrop, as they say, basically. It's an important point to understand. For example, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur makes this in his Raghavarma Chandrika, when he says, actually, without Aishvarya, we cannot have Madhurya. In other words, Krishna is a child, no? For example, like that very nice painting. Mm-hmm. No? And we may feel attracted to that, but what's the difference between being attracted, the attraction that we can feel for him, and the attraction with any other baby? What's the, he says, the unique feature of being attracted to Krishna? What is especially charming is that Actually, he's God. But nonetheless, he's a child. No? You follow? Mm-hmm. No, another baby is not God. He's a child. Krishna is a child, but he's God also. So the fact that Aishwarya is there, Aishwarya means he's God, that allows the experience of Madhurya. Despite being God, he's behaving like that. Oh, how charming.
But the Vrajbasis aren't thinking like that, right?
No, of course not. We are thinking, we have to think like that in our situation.
How can you still call it Aishwarya, though, if they are not?
Because Aishwarya is there. I mean, although they are not thinking that, but the Aishwarya is there in the sense that Krishna is God. Although they are not thinking like that.
Oh, I thought it was more the attitude of the devotee having awe and reverence for.
There are different ways to explain Aishwarya. Yeah, there are different ways to explain Aishwarya. Okay. Here I'm not referring to Aishwarya as Vrajavasis being aware Krishna is God. But even Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur makes that point, there are certain sections in the Bhagavatam where it comes to the surface that Krishna may be God. Because he does some quite extraordinary things. No? Because, for example, lifting of Govardhan. Before that, the elders in Vrindavan heard Krishna kill this demon, kill that demon, but they thought, no, these are all stories from the kids. Every day they are creating a new story and this demoness and this whatever, this and that, and every day a new story. And when he left Govardhan for a week in front of everyone's eyes, I mean, it was like in your face, undeniable. So some started like to wonder, what's going on? I mean, it's pretty uncommon that a child with little child, little finger, the less powerful hand, one whole week, how to accommodate that. So at some point, some of them were like wondering, maybe Krishna is God? We remember Gargacharya said, he will be extraordinary. Narayan will be doing extraordinary things through him. Okay, we know that, but maybe he is God? And of course, they quickly dismissed that idea. But at some moments that it comes to the surface, there's moments like that. Very quickly they will say, maybe he's God. And Ananda Maharaj in some moment may say, even if he's God, first he's my child. But he may be God. Okay, that's secondary. So that's how it works, the psychology of the Vrajavasis. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur makes it point in the Raghavarma Chandrika. He says, it's like a mother who has a child, a son, and the son becomes the president of the country. Mm-hmm. No? So if the son becomes the president of the United States, for the mother it's not like, oh, now my child is a president. Good morning, Mr. President. Mm-hmm. No. For her it's, oh, how beautiful my baby, now he's the president of the United States. Her vatsalya is increasing. Mm-hmm. No? Mm-hmm. Even on the presence of Aishwarya, if you want to call that president of the United States, awareness of he's so great, that only nourishes her madhurya. So something like that may happen even with the Vrajavasis. At some moment, which is not the general case, that Aishwarya may come, that only nourishes their madhurya. That's their psychology. If there is Aishwarya coming on their way, that's nourishing their madhurya. If there's no Aishwarya coming on the way, that's nourishing their madhurya. You put whatever you like in front of them, that's nourishing their their intimacy for Krishna. So my point, but the point is that for Madhurya, again, we are not saying that how the Vrajavasis feel, but how we as sadhakas from here understand the experience of Madhurya and Vrindavan, there has to be Aishwarya. Because if you take out Aishwarya, there's only ordinary dealings between people. And the fact that Krishna is especially charming in all that is because he is God, and despite that, he's behaving as an ordinary human being. Because if not, what's the difference between that and an ordinary human being? The difference between that make his play, his activities lila and very charming is he is God. But all the things are, all those layers of Aishwarya are like buried under layers and layers of affection and intimacy. But Aishwarya is there. There's more Aishwarya in Vrindavan than in Vaikuntha, actually. In Vrindavan, the soil is Chintamani. The trees are Kalpavriksha, the cows are Suravi, Kamadenu, can satisfy all wishes. That's pretty Aishwaric. But interestingly, nobody in Vrindavan is interested in asking anything from them. They're not asking, oh, you are Chintamani, give me so many things, oh, three Kalpavriksha, I have this, this, that. The only desire is, oh, give me a fruit so I can offer to Krishna. Give me a flower so I can offer to Krishna. So that's interesting. That's the real opulence, ultimately. There's so much opulence around them, but they only want to serve Krishna. In one sense, that's the highest opulence, which is totally intimate and sweet. So, also as we mentioned the other day, and this section broadcasts, and I would like to concentrate for a minute on this, one of the three main sentiments that are mainly broadcasted in Vrindavan, which are Sakya, Vatsalya, and Madhurya. So we mentioned these three ages of Krishna corresponding with these three relationships, fathers, parents, friends, and lovers, and connected with different Leelas like Damodar Leela, this Leela, and Rasa Leela correspondingly. And in particular, in connection to our Gaudiya Sampradaya, there are two main currents that are mostly available there, especially because of the presence of the Samasti Gurus of our Sampradaya, who are Gaur Nityananda. So Sriman Mahaprabhu, Sri Chaitanya Dev, he embodies this dispensation of Madhurya Bhav, and Nityananda Prabhu in Balaram represents the principle of Sakya Prem. So we find these two currents in our Sampradaya. And this particular section we are studying here is broadcasting Sakya Rasa, the possibility of a friendly relationship with Krishna. From the Agasur Leela, Krishna with the friends, having picnic and all that come from that. Of course, our lineage is mostly saturated with Madhurya Bhav, Manjari Bhav more specifically. But also there are some important, interesting examples that show the possibility of Sakya Bhav, as we mentioned these days. To begin with, Brahma, the very first created being and the first member of our Sampradaya, Brahma Sampradaya, Brahma Madhva-Gaudiya Sampradaya. The first member is expressing as a Bhagavatam says, a desire for Sakya Prem. For those, again, who would like to engage in racism and say only one thing is the legal one, we see that Brahma is showing something else. After Brahma, who comes? Narad. Narada, who is an expansion of Madhu Mangal in Vrindavan. Madhu Mangal is Priyanarma Saka. Sakya Rasa again. Then you have Vyasadev. If you want to make some connection, Vyasadev in Gaur Leela is Vrindavan Das Thakur. So there is that connection. Vrindavan Das Thakur is in Sakya Rasa. Then you have coming more close to Gaur Leela, you have Nityananda Prabhu. And if you want to come to more contemporary times, we have great personalities like Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj, disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, also having that affinity. And Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada, when he engaged in Nitya Leela Pravishta, when he entered the Nitya Leela, interestingly, as we mentioned the other day, he was absorbed in commenting this section, Rama Vimohan Leela. Very interestingly, this very unique section. So again, is there a particular reason for this, or was it just casual that he happened to pass away in that moment? No, there's particular reason. There's more than one particular reason. Both there are reasons in terms of tattva, and there are reasons in terms of bhava. So let's for a minute explore them to understand why. In terms of tattva, in terms of siddhanta, in terms of philosophical conclusion, again, Prabhupada left this world in the midst of this section, which, as we mentioned, establishes more than any other section, which idea? Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam, which is something that Prabhupada mentioned maybe more than any other thing. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. My Guru Maharaj sometimes says, sometimes devotees will say, but Prabhupada, in terms of editing, when you publish a book, it may sound redundant that you repeat the Supreme Personality of Godhead so many times. But Prabhupada say, no, I want that fixed there. No, there is a point I want to make with this idea. So it became kind of how do you say in English?
Byline.
Yeah, no? Krishna, and we know what follows after Krishna, the Supreme Personality. So again, there's no other section, arguably. This is the most important statement, as we mentioned, of the whole Bhagavatam. And Prabhupada left in this particular section. So in one sense, if we consider Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam is the most important statement of the Bhagavatam, and this section is the section where this statement is played out the most. In one sense, we could say this is the most important section of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in one sense. Of course, everyone will agree in general, the Rasa Panchadhyaya, in one sense, is the most important section, the five chapters of the Rasa Lila. Sometimes I consider the five pranas of the Bhagavatam. But without understanding the Brahma Vimohan Lila, without understanding Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam, you won't understand Rasa Lila properly. You will misunderstand Rasa Lila grossly. If you don't have very clear Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you will jump to the Rasa Lila and think, what's going on here? No. Because again, more than anywhere else, Brahma Vimohan Lila is showing the ultimacy of Krishna. Krishna is the ultimate feature of divinity. As I mentioned, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, when in his fourth chapter of Adi Lila is trying to establish this point, Krishna is the source of Narayana and not vice versa, he refers over and over again to the Brahma Vimohan Lila, drawing verses and Brahma Stuti and the verses of Brahma to establish this principle. So my Guru Maharaj will say, no, if you understand properly Brahma Vimohan Lila and the prayers of Brahma that will follow suit, you will then proceed with the required adhikar to the Rasa Lila. You can approach the most esoteric reality of the Rasa Lila with aprakrit shraddha or transcendental faith, basically, in the supremacy of Krishna, having very clear who is Krishna, he's Swayam Bhagavan, and therefore only then you will be able to take advantage of the romantic rendezvous and lila of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna, which is described in the Rasa Panchadhyaya. If that's not clearly in place, Rasa Lila, as many of our acharyas have cautioned us, will actually act as udipan or stimulant for kama, for lust. If you don't have everything, certain things in place before. So that's, again, in brief, why Srila Prabhupada passed away in terms of tattva while translating this section. Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam, Krishna is Supreme Personality of God. And in terms of bhava, in terms of spiritual emotion, well, Prabhupada passed away in the midst of that because this section, again, Brahma Vimohan Lila, speaks more than any other section in the Bhagavatam about that thing that constitutes Srila Prabhupada's own inner affinity, which is Sakya Bhava, the eternal bhava, the eternal prospect, fraternal love for Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada made this clear on more than one occasion, because sometimes devotees may say, why are you speaking about something that Prabhupada never spoke about? Well, you may be surprised, he spoke about quite a few times. There's a compilation, a book called Oh My Friend, where Tripad Bhakti Abhayashram Maharaj made a very interesting compilation of many of the times that Srila Prabhupada expressed very clearly an affinity for Sakya Ras, and that was further confirmed by god brothers of him who knew him very closely, like Srila Bhakti Rakyaksi Ardeb Goswami Maharaj, and so on. So in this way, this section of the Bhagavatam is like acting like a portal, if you will, through which Srila Prabhupada entered the Sakya Mandal, or the circle of friends, as my Guru Maharaj will put. No? He entered the Nitya Lila in Sakya Bhava, in Priyanarma Sakya Bhava, more specifically. No? This type of friendship, which is connected to Krishna's romanticism, if you will. So, a brief words in connection to also why our Srila Prabhupada mystically passed away while in the midst of translating this particular section, both in terms of bhava and tattva. So, before concluding, if you have some extra minutes, I would like to turn to another direction, but in connection to this. Because, again, I try to explain why these chapters are so important to us, how they establish this ultimate principle of Krishna's Stu Bhagavan Swayam. And as important as all this is to us, you may imagine that not necessarily every other Vaishnav group, apart from the Gaudiya Vaishnavs, some others may not consider this section as important. And even, interestingly enough, some will see this particular section as an interpolation in the Bhagavatam. These three chapters, chapter 12, 13, and 14, from the 10th canto, there may consider this is not part of the original texts. So before, again, officially starting our study of the Brahma Stuti, the next class, I'd like to conclude today's meeting with some analyzing a few of the arguments that are presented in, for trying to prove that this is an interpolation, and of course, what's our reply to that? Maybe you are not aware of this, but well, yeah, it's interesting to get to know about that and how these things play out. Yeah, no,
some vague ideas. Mm-hmm.
So it's an old controversy actually, and there are diverse scholars from different groups which actually had this stance. Some are coming from the Pusti Marg or the Balab Sampradaya. I will say the stronger ones come from that group. Some will come from the Madhva Sampradaya. That may come from the Sri Sampradaya, Ramanuja Sampradaya. But from all of those, only some members of the Balab Sampradaya are those who have somehow gone at great lengths in trying to establish by writing how these chapters are interpolated. Some others may have expressed that, have mentioned that, yeah, they are interpolated or something because whatever, no? They consider, because our acharyas have not commented on them, because there are some commentaries to the Bhagavatam in which some acharyas do not comment to certain chapters. So some, they may have taken off. Because of that, they consider these chapters are not important or interpolated, and they indirectly disapprove them by not commenting on that. But of course, in contrast, we Gaudiyas and our acharyas, along with some other Vaishnav lineages like Nimbarka Sampradaya, even Sankaracharya, interestingly also, which is not Vaishnav, but the Sankara Sampradaya also, Sankara's followers have commented on the Bhagavatam. So all of them consider these three chapters authentic. No? Gaudiyas, Nimbarkis, followers of Advaita Vedanta. So remember, for us, it's very important to know how to establish that these chapters are not interpolated, because for us, these three chapters are very important. They're virtually Vyasadeva's commentary on Krishna's Stupa Gavan Swayam. No? Krishna's Stupa Gavan Swayam, then three chapters trying to explore that. And if we reject those three chapters, I mean, the very purpose of Vyasadeva to compile in this book is not fulfilled. So we need to know how to make that clear. So let's analyze some of the main arguments. There are many arguments. I will just briefly mention some. If you would like to know all of them or mostly all of them, you can let me know, and I can. There is one file with a long list of almost 50 pages of arguments and the reply to that. But let's go to the main ones. So, for example, to begin with, before going to an argument, it's important to know that there are certain parts in the Bhagavatam outside of these three chapters that there are names of Krishna which refer to his killing of Agasura, for example. For example, in verse 3:15:23, Krishna is called Agavit, which means basically the killer of Aga. So my point is, if these three chapters are an interpolation and Krishna never killed Agasura, but in the third canto, Krishna is referred to as the killer of Agasur. That's kind of confirming that happened. That's for real. And there are many other verses in the Bhagavatam in that same line. In 10:31:3, also Vyala Rakshasat, Krishna is described as the killer of Sridhar Swami, another ancient commentator respected by everyone, are connected to Agasur. In 10:2:1 of the Bhagavatam also, Mahashanai, also is connected by ancient commentators to Agasura. Also, interestingly, these pastimes that happen in these three chapters are also appear also in other Puranas. So it's not only that appear only in the Bhagavad Purana. They appear in the Padma Purana, they appear in the Brahmanda Purana. So the point is, they cannot be just easily rejected because they are present in other books. No? Do you follow my point?
Mm-hmm.
So, also, at the same time, all the sites in Vrindavan, when all these lilas were enacted, if you will, are popularly known in Vrindavan until today. So it's not that, because, I mean, if these lilas talis or the place for the lila are connected nowadays in Vrindavan to those narrations, it's basically because those narrations how to say, because these lilas are mentioned in the Bhagavatam, there are places associated with those lilas, no? And not vice versa. Mm-hmm. Also, Sridhar Swami, again, famous ancient commentator of the Bhagavatam, very revered by Mahaprabhu and many others, he mentions, in Sanskrit it says, Dvatrim Shat Trishatam Chashyasya Bilasat Sakha, which means basically, Srimad Bhagavatam has 335 chapters. No? Yeah. 18,000 verses, we will go also to that, but 335 chapters. And he's not mentioning here at any point, there are, I don't know, some chapters which are not included, three chapters are an interpolation. And if you count all the chapters, including these three chapters we are studying, it makes for 335 chapters. Now, if you take those three, it will be 332, but Sridhar Swami is saying 335. And also, Sridhar Swami mentions 10th canto has 90 chapters, which are the 90 that we know. If you take these three chapters out, it will be 87. But Sridhar Swami is not saying 87, he's saying 90 chapters. Also, some followers of Madhvacharya, in this case, reject these chapters considering that they go against their philosophy. Why? Because one aspect of their philosophy, which is for them, a demon that is killed by Krishna cannot attain liberation. That's a point in their particular philosophy. But interestingly, I mean, we know that this is not only limited to Agasura. There are many other sections outside of these three chapters which show how, for example, in Bhagavatam 2.7, 34, 35, these two verses mention a long list of demons that were killed. Not only one or two, the main ones, but long list. All of them killed by Krishna and all of them attaining some type of liberation. Brahman by Kunta, or the very exceptional case of Putana attaining position of a mother in Vrindavan, famous verse, Ahovakiyam Shanakalakutam, which mentions that. How wonderful. No? She approached Krishna in the worst possible way. And he said, oh, you're dressed as a Vaishnavi. How nice. No? You become my mother. You offer your breast milk. Go to Golok. So that's an example of Kripa Siddhi. No? Perfection attained by extreme mercy. Without any sadhana almost whatsoever in between. So also in chapter 10, canto 10, chapter 45, verse 39, speaking about Kamsa. So my point is, yes, there are many sections in the Bhagavatam speaking about demons attaining liberation by being killed by Krishna. So it's not that only this Agasura is a weird example and therefore this whole section is interpolated. If that's the case, we have to take out so many sections from the Bhagavatam that mention this same thing. Also, some followers of Madhvacharya will say, actually, this section is interpolated because Madhvacharya did not comment on them, on these three chapters, as we mentioned before. But the point, one may say, well, maybe he did not comment because of the reasons we just mentioned, because he disagrees with the idea a demon may be killed by Krishna and attain liberation. We don't know why he didn't comment. But the point is that he didn't comment on many other chapters as well. It's not only on those three. He didn't comment on chapter 11 of the 10th canto. He didn't comment on chapter 15, which are before and after. So if you follow that line of thought, then all of those chapters also are interpolated because Madhvacharya did not comment on them. And that's not a fact. Also, interestingly, some will say that these chapters are interpolated because some repeated verses appear. For example, you can check later, but if you go to chapter, canto 10, chapter 11, verse 59, there's one verse. And if you go to canto 10, chapter 14, verse 61, the same verse is there. So there are similar verses, but the point is, if you think, okay, because these two verses appear twice, then the second time it appears, which is in the Brahma Stuti, that might be an interpolation. But there are many other examples of the same thing throughout the Bhagavad. That's the Gita, yeah. Yeah, there are some difference in the last two lines. But in this case, they are exactly the same. And there is another example in the 7th canto. If you go to 7th canto, and just hearing the numbers for those who would like to check. 7th canto, 10th chapter, verses 48 to 50, three verses. And then you go to 7th canto, chapter 15, verses 75 to 77. There are three verses which are exactly the same. No? Five chapters before or after. So again, nobody's considering those are an interpolation. We have to do something because the verses are repeated. No? I mean, you can repeat something. There's no problem with repeating some statement, making that some point clear or something. Something else regarding Balabhacharya, and we spoke about Madhvacharya a little bit. Balabhacharya considers these chapters an interpolation, but interestingly, in his commentary on the Bhagavatam, he has commented on them. That's an interesting idea.
So is that the same commentary he gave to Lord Chaitanya?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Okay.
So he commented on that, and not only that. I mean, his followers say that Balabhacharya considers them an interpolation. I have not heard that he himself say somewhere that. But he commented on it, and not only that, but he composed something called Purushottam Sahasranam, which means thousand names for Purushottam, which means thousand names for Krishna. And verses 167 to 169... he mentions clearly many names of Krishna, all of which are related to Agasur Lila. No? The killer of Agasur, one who eats in the forest, liberator of the snake in connection to Agasura, the cause of Brahma's delusion, Brahma Mohanakarta, he who bewilders Brahma, he who has unlimited forms, the one that was shown to Brahma. All these names are mentioned by Balabhacharya. No? So how much he considered that to be a...
What did they object to so much in those three chapters? I mean,
it just doesn't fit their philosophy, essentially.
Yeah, others are. Yeah, others, for example, will argue that Brahma was blessed at the beginning of creation. Remember when he met Krishna, and Brahma asked Krishna, "Please protect me, so when I engage in all this creative work, being the architect of the universe, I may not be bewildered by your Maya." So some may say, well, but here we see that he was bewildered. So it cannot be true because Krishna promised to protect him. So there is a contradiction there. Srila Sri Ramana says something similar. He says some of the followers of Madhva Sampradaya reject this section because they cannot conceive that their Adi Guru was bewildered. Mm-hmm. No. How the Guru will be an illusion. Okay. But the important point here to establish and reply to this is that Brahma asked Krishna, protect me from the influence of Mahamaya while I'll engage in connection to her, because he's the architect of this world, so he's to work with that expression of Maya Shakti. And he was protected from that. His bewilderment here has to do with Yoga Maya.
Yeah.
So it's another department of Maya. Mm-hmm. So Krishna promised, yeah, I will protect you from that Maya. Period. Yoga Maya is another department. Krishna didn't say nothing.
Nor did he ask for it.
Yeah.
So that's the way we will reply to this point. Mm-hmm. And again, one important problem that the ones who consider these three chapters like spurious, you say?
Spurious.
Is that they are not considering the number of verses that the Bhagavatam has. Because in many Puranas, the number of verses of the Bhagavatam is established as being 18,000. I mean, the Matsya Purana, Vishnu Purana, Skanda Purana. Again, it's not that there's nowhere is said or there are contradictions. All these different Puranas say 18,000 verses. Narada Pancharatra. So nobody's disputing this point. Mm-hmm. 18,000 verses. But the point is, if you consider these three chapters as interpolated and take them out, you will have 210 verses less. So you won't get to the 18,000 verses. And that's said in many other Puranas.
Is it exactly 18,000?
It's 17,998. I mean, sometimes there are some criteria regarding the meter of the verses.
Right.
So if sometimes you adapt certain parts of the meter, it can make 18,000. But again, it's 18,017,1998 is two verses different.
Right.
Here it's 210 verses. If you take out this section.
Yeah.
So that's again a big problem that you cannot compensate for that loss by adjusting the meter anyhow. No? So it's almost like 1% of the total Bhagavatam missing. A little bit more than that. And finally, just to conclude, if you say, that was an interpolation. So the question is, who did the interpolation? When? where? Which foundation do you have to prove your point? None of the critics who have presented this type of argument have furnished any answer to this. They don't have any idea to say, such a person did this on this year. So again, there's no substantial proof that these three chapters are interpolation.
Why did they start thinking that it was?
Again, maybe for, there are different people thinking that, and maybe for different reasons, and as we mentioned, some of them because our acharyas have not commented on that, or because some demons are being liberated, and that's against our conclusions of our philosophy. Maybe some other reasons that we may never know, but they are there presenting their arguments. But the point is, again, we have no reason to accept that these three chapters are interpolation, because, again, we have clear proof to the contrary. And for us, it's in particular Gaudiya Vaishnavas, what we mentioned on our first lecture, we accept the Bhagavatam as non-different from Krishna. Non-different. He's like Granta Avatar. He's like the divine descent in the form of scripture. So, and all the Bhagavatam, the different cantos of the Bhagavatam, as you know, have been compared with different limbs of the transcendental body of Krishna. So, any attempt of reducing or cutting, if you will, any part of the Bhagavatam is comparable to cutting some part of the body of Krishna, if you will. Sometimes they compare that to the act of Jara, of this hunter who threw the arrow on Krishna's heel, you say? Mm-hmm. So again, and especially rejecting a part of the 10th canto. 10th canto, as you know, is the smiling face of Krishna. No? So basically, it's even worse because that's the center of the center. No? And as if you try to amputate a section from that, that's not very, very becoming. Basically. So basically that I wanted to share a little bit just to have a notion of some of these arguments in case you may found them and you know what to say about that. But apart from all these important points again that we covered today about the Bhagavata in the beginning, Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam, how important this section of the Brahma Vimohan Lila is. I will close today, but next lecture we will start with the very first verse. Just, I think we are ready for entering the first, very first verse, and it's very nicely because we will see how all our Gaudiya Siddhanta will be brilliantly exposed by Brahma in a very systematic way and gradually unfolding and gradually reaching more and more the bhava of the Vrajavasis, and Brahma himself becoming more and more emotional and increasing his longing in his own aspiration for Sakya Bhav, and all this will act as the perfect philosophical ground for what Braja Bhav represents. As we said the other day, no, we are after Bhav, but for us Bhav is not just mundane emotion, but it's an emotion that has as its foundation philosophy, Siddhanta, Tattva. So Bhav is a philosophical emotion. So Brahma will create that grounding by establishing very clearly which is our conclusion, our Siddhanta, Bhakti Siddhanta, and on top of that he will like wield this temple of Bhava or divine emotion as the Brahma Stuti progresses. So that's till today. We have some minutes if you have some questions or comments. Yeah.
You mentioned that Madhvacharya had this idea that the demons were, actually you may not have said this, but I heard this, that some demons eternal live in the material world. They have a purpose in the material world. And then I heard that Sridhar Maharaj said the same thing, that Pujapad Sridhar Maharaj had mentioned that at some lecture. And I'd only heard this briefly one time, that there may be some demons who just are always here.
I'm wondering
if that could be the reason why.
I like to see the specific idea and context, because Madhvas, the followers of Madhva have this idea of different types of jivas, but a different idea that we may also express in those terms in different way. We may say they are jivas jivas are made of tatastha shakti, but there are atmas who are made of swarup shakti. But generally, the term jiva, technically speaking, does not apply to someone who is composed of Swarup Shakti. For example, Yashoda, Nanda, Lalita, Visakha, they are not Tathasta jivas. They are Swarup Shakti, personality, Nitya Parishads. So that may be our different in notions about jivas, but Madhvacharya goes, and Balabhacharya as well, they have this idea of tamasic jivas, rajasic jivas, and so on. Different words they use. In my book, I wrote about that in one footnote thing. That they think there are some jivas who are eternally condemned to be in the material world. And they have no hope whatsoever of transcendence. Mm-hmm. Which, for us, is not something that we find too okay.
You would have to argue Nityananda with that, I think.
That's
a
whole.
You would take that on. Mm-hmm.
So they will consider it. There are some Jews who are always liberated, some Jews that will eventually become liberated, and there are some Jews that will never become liberated. No? And I imagine they have. I never went to the further detail about the reason for that, how they do they explain that. But once I asked one devotee, and they told me, so how do you know if you are following that idea? How do you know which type of jiva you are? And they told, well, probably if you are asking the question, you are one of the ones who can become liberated eventually. Anyhow.
I mean, it almost seems to me that if you just hear the holy name, there's that example in Jiva Dharma of the Mayavadi who's meditating in Lord Chaitanya. It seems like they don't actually say Lord Chaitanya, but it seems like it's Lord Chaitanya goes by singing, and immediately it breaks his meditation and he has to find out what that was, you know. Hmm. So it kind of strikes me as a little like that, you know, that mercy is just, it doesn't have any purpose, you know. I mean, it doesn't single out people, it's just there, you know. Mm. It's like us going out in the street and doing Harinam, you know, you would see people reacting one way or another, but they would always react. Mm. It wasn't like you could just ignore the Harinam, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's like, kind of like that, I think. Mm.
Here Namras is asking, can you explain why you mean or what you mean by interpolated? Basically, that I referred to a section that was not present in the original text and was kind of injected, added eventually in time, but was not part of the original Bhagavad.
Maharaj, you mentioned four of the Sandarbhas.
Yeah.
You got to the Krishna, but you didn't tell us the last.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I want to reach the point of the Krishna Sandarbha. And the two, these are the first four Sandarbhas have to do with Sambandha.
Right.
So Tattva Sandarbha, Bhagavat Sandarbha, Paramatma Sandarbha, and Krishna Sandarbha have to do with Sambandha, with establishing what is what. And then comes Bhakti Sandarbha and Priti Sandarbha. Bhakti Sandarbha has to do with Avideya, and it's about Bhakti, basically. And then have Priti Sandarbha has to do with Prayojan. Priti is a synonym for Prem. So, and each Sandarbha is exponentially longer than the previous one. So, the more the topic blossoms, the more Jiva Goswami is inspired to
write. How did he find the time to write that?
I mean, that's astonishing. I don't have a clue. I don't have a clue how he find. We were speaking about that with devotees in New Jersey, I think. How did he, or the Goswamis in general even, were able to find all the scriptural references they were quoting in their books? Because it's not that they have, I mean, it was not like I Google and download the PDF or something.
How would they even have time to scratch the letters?
Exactly.
It's not like they had a...
Yeah, and keep the books. Yeah,
easily write.
Yeah, and keep...
But the Satsang Dharmas are 300,000 verses. Something like that.
The what, sorry?
All that
Jiva Goswami wrote is 400,000 verses in total, all his corpus. Not only the Satsandarbha, but the Satsandarbha, of course, is the longest. Mm. They are not necessarily like verses.
Right, but that's 60,000 verses.
But it's,
a year,
I mean, it's very robust. Very robust scripture.
So it's figured that you'd be writing for 30 years.
Just to think how they, because he's quoting this verse from the Padma Purana and this verse from the Skanda Purana, and sometimes devotees may say, well, they were the Goswamis, they were eternal liberators, so they knew everything, they didn't have to, but I don't subscribe to that. I mean, they are who they are, but I mean, for me, that diminishes their the contribution. They actually were researching and looking through the works, and they have this whole Grantha Mandir. If you go to Vrindavan, there was a whole library of Shastra that is buried in the ground. So they were doing all this work and finding the verses and including and putting them in context. And only the research for those verses is, for me, like, overwhelming. What to speak of all that they wrote and the contribution, but just the research for the quotings is like otherworldly. What to speak of all that comes after.
Well, I mean, they were doing so many other things. I mean, St. Angus Swami was.
They were not only writing.
Wandering around, you know, counseling people. I mean,
Having ideal sadhana. Sanatana Goswami was circumambulating Govardhan every day. They were constructing temples, Radha Govindaji temple. Again, they were not only writing, they were doing so many things.
It's incredible. It's almost like they weren't really there. They were kind of transported to a different place where they had all this time to do this. Mm. And then they would come back. Mm. And,
So for me, all the things, of course, are very telling about how much we should study the books of the Goswamis, because they gave so much of themselves there, and our own acharyas are emphasizing so much. I always recall Srila Prabhupada telling in his first commentary to the first verse, to the first chapter, to the first canto of the Bhagavatam, saying the Goswamis and our predecessor acharyas have shared a wealth of commentaries and books. So if someone is serious in studying the Bhagavatam, that person should go and study all those commentaries as well. Mm. No. So, and that's not a joke. It takes so much for us to read them, and you think, how did they have the time to write them? Because generally you think it takes more time to write something than to read something. Mm. But they write quicker than what we read.
Vyasaraj has been writing this commentary on the Sindarbhas for how long? For like 12 years or something, and he's not finished yet.
Satyanarayan. Yeah. He's about to finish now. He has the Priti Sandarbha.
Right.
But the other day I was speaking to his secretary, Malati, and asked her, when do you think that will be published? He told me, at least 2 years. Because it's not only writing the commentaries, all that entails publishing a book, as you know, in the best possible way. So yeah, these are like very titanic works and whatever, to translate them, to comment on them, and to study them is also titanic work. But we are meant to through those works, you really get a grasp of what's the Bhagavatam about. You, as we were speaking the other day, you take out all the commentaries to the Bhagavatam and all the books of the Goswami and just read the Bhagavatam without any commentary, who knows which idea you will have. Who knows how far you can get regarding what the Bhagavatam is actually telling. But when you start to go to every single commentary, you realize, oh, this was in this verse. Oh, this was the in-between dialogue between Krishna and the gopis in this verse. This is in between the lines. These are the implications. This is the connection to this section. Like, oh my God. Yeah. This is the Bhagavatam. So that's a very, very mind-boggling experience. But that's the gift we are receiving through the parampara. So we are extremely blessed and fortunate. Okay, thank you so much for your time. Srila Gurudev ki jai, Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Sri Harinam Sankirtan ki jai, Sri Sri Gornitinanda ki jai, Sri Sri Brajanan Haladar ki jai, Nishrimha Bhagavan ki jai, Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Brahma Stuti ki jai, Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam ki jai, Braja Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Priman.